Do you know a young emerging reader? If so, check out the first book in a brand new series called Ghost Detectives by Jeanette Stamponi. Book number one is titled Terrified and the Bakery Ghost. You guessed it, cakes, spooks, and a lot of silliness. 9-year-old Terrified is terrified of anything remotely scary. But when you come from a family of ghost detectives, this can be a bit of a problem. When Terry is left in charge of a bakery haunting, it's up to him to solve the mystery. Will it be cake-tastrophe or a spooktastic triumph? This story is adventurous, mysterious, and a little bit spooky, but not too scary. Terrified and the Bakery Ghost is the perfect book for young readers to devour. Find more details on Jeanette's website, JeanetteStamponi.com.
Hello, authors. I'm Joanne Morell, children's and young adult fiction writer and author of Short Nonfiction for Authors. Thanks for joining me for the Hybrid Author Podcast, sharing interviews from industry professionals to help you forge a career as a hybrid author, both independently and traditionally publishing your books. You can get the show notes for each episode and sign up for your free author pass over at the Hybrid Author website to discover your writing process, get tips on how to publish productively, and get comfortable promoting your books at www.hybridauthor.com.au. Let's crack on with the episode.
Hello, authors. I hope you're all keeping well in whatever part of the world you reside and listen to the podcast. Today's interview is with Catherine DeVries on science fantasy, Kickstarter, and Son of Osiris, bringing big stories to life. And we chat her new science fiction novella, Son of Osiris, launching through Kickstarter with exclusive content before its retail release in 2026, balancing science fiction and fantasy genres, and what readers can expect in terms of themes or big emotional stakes, Catherine's hybrid publishing adventure navigating the traditional and self-publishing routes, her advice for authors considering Kickstarter or other direct-to-reader models, and much more. So in my author adventure this week, I have been doing a bit of romance book research. So I visited my local library just to see what they had in stock in terms of Harlequin romance books. So if anybody has heard of, probably everybody listening has heard of HarperCollins, which is one of the big five publishers. Harlequin is an imprint of HarperCollins. It's a romance imprint. It blows my mind how many different categories of romance there are. You think romance book or love story, but there's actually lots of different kinds of love stories out there. And I'm not just talking about story. I mean, so you could have the spicy romance where they just get right into it. The, you know, sex on the page, it's real graphic and scenic and whatever else. You can have romance that's a slow build up to the intimacy, you know, lots of sideway glances or hands brushing or just this build up to the actual act of lovemaking or whatever else, falling in love even. And then you can have what some people call closed door romance, where it's just implied, you know, what's happening with the characters are doing to each other. There's nothing actually explicit on the page. And you can just have the love story where they get together at the end. It's about just the attraction and things like that. So the wholesome, you know, there's just so many and it just blows my mind. So I went to the library to get a couple of these different categories just to read them to see the way that things are laid out on the page, and I'm getting a real education there for this type of thing. And it's actually surprising, like, to order the Harlequin books, they wouldn't allow me to order them because Australia is not in their district or their territory, which obviously they're in the US. But I found that a bit odd. They, you know, Harlequin, I think what the librarian was telling me, is Mills and Boons in Australia, which is what my mum used to read. I remember stealing her Mills and Boons and reading them. They're a bit racy, some of them, but really just quite small. What it was interesting from a publisher's eye to see them on the shelf. The Harlequin logo is always at the top of the spine rather than the bottom of the spine. That's how you can distinguish it. You can also distinguish their books that they're all seem to be A5 in size. So they're quite small pocket size. And I guess that used to be because people would carry, you know, women would carry them around in their purses, their bags, easy to carry, nothing big too heavy luggage, so you can stop and read on the go. And just, yeah, you know, it's just nice to hold, actually. And it feels achievable as well for a reader. Say you're not a fast reader or a reluctant reader, you could look at this little booklet and think, I can read that. You know, that's small, it's easy to read. So I just feel like all these things are marketable for a target audience. And I look at these types of things too. I couldn't tell you when I looked at them, 50,000 words? I don't know. Maybe it looks a little bit less for some of them. Obviously, some are thicker, the 70,000 word range. So I've actually ordered in from my local library some of the new titles that were published this year for each of the Harlequin imprints, because they've just got some older stuff. So that's coming. And so see how long it takes. It did say a couple of weeks, so fingers crossed it gets here quickly. And it just made me think about, it's not just romance that there's different blends. Aspiring authors can think, oh, I'm going to write in the horror genre, but there, again, there's always so much more to each genre than you actually think. The different types of horror, the same as romance, you know, there's the blood, guts and gore, which I'm not a big fan of kind of horror. There's your fright night terror, make people jump and scream, give them a fright kind of horror. There's the everyday life, you know, kind of horror where your husband's really the axe murderer type of thing, you know, like realism. I have all sorts of different kinds of genre blends that you can mix. I would imagine, you know, action adventure and the rest of the genres are all the same. There's all different parts that make up different things. And I guess it's the same as life. You know, you think about there's always so much more to something than you give it thought. And I think that's the same in every profession, really. So at the moment, I am busy distributing The Writer, the Hairdresser and the Nurse, my first in women's fiction. I published it last year and kind of got held up remaking the product through Amazon as a different size book, and I've had some issues there with the distribution as well. There is an option that you can go through the Australian Society of Authors, and it's one that I'm following up with. I haven't actually ever done it before. John Reed Books, you can submit to them to see if they will take on your book and then get it into bookstores for you. I haven't really bothered with bookstores in the past for my short nonfiction because I know right away it's too small for the shelf. It would get lost with those types of books when I finally finish the series. I would like to make into one big book, and then that is more marketable to shelf space and shelf life and things like that. It's value for money. 5 books in one or something like that. In this aspect, my women's fiction is a good shelf book. The cover's great. It's going to look good standing there. The story's fantastic. And it would appeal to patrons, I think, that come into bookstores, obviously. But they're over east. I've already made the start of contacting local libraries here, not bookshops, but libraries, and letting them know about my work and things like that. It's a big undertaking, but that's just what you have to do, I suppose, when you're a self-publisher. So at the moment with my writing, I am doing the hybrid thing, which is a scattergun approach of doing little bits of each project because, yeah, if you've listened to the last couple of episodes, I've said that I feel this is what this podcast is about. There's not one way of doing things. And I am finding that with each different writing project, I approach it differently. With the women's fiction, plotting, did it all at once. Whereas in the past, it's been just writing as I go along. For children's fiction, it's just all different. So at the moment, I'm feeling that I need to do a little bit of each, and that's good enough for me right now. Small steps equal big things, and I feel good that I am chipping away at each project rather than just focusing on one. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with that.
Thorn Creative, where beautiful websites for authors are brought to life. No matter what stage you're at with your writing, your stories deserve a dedicated space to shine. Whether you're just starting out or have a bookshelf full of bestsellers, your website is the hub of your author business, binding everything you and your books offer together. Thorn Creative can nurture all aspects of redesigning your old site or start afresh from the initial design. They can provide ongoing hosting and maintenance to marketing your books online, saving you time, money, and stress trying to wrangle your site yourself. An author website built by Thorn Creative can easily direct readers to your favorite retailers, your publisher, or simply set you up to sell to them direct. the options are endless. Thorn Creative have worked with many authors across all genres and know what goes into good, functional working author websites to sell books. Head on over to thorncreative.com.au/websitesforauthors to read author and publisher testimonials and to see what they offer and some of the sites they've created.
DeVries is an award-winning fantasy and sci-fi author who explores themes of restorative justice, empowerment, connection with earth and spirit, and finding the true self in her work, all wrapped up in an epic package of immersive world-building and sweet romance, very hybrid. A former Air Force engineer and recovering perfectionist, she now homeschools her children, two of whom are on the autism spectrum. She and her family live in the Gold Coast hinterland of Australia, where she enjoys living in a rainforest and pretending she's an elf. Welcome to the Hybrid Author Podcast, Catherine.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
We are absolutely honored and thrilled for you to join us. So yeah, we're just dying to know, why writing? How did you end up becoming a writer in the genres you do?
Well, I've always loved reading and writing, like right from when I was really tiny, but becoming an author was actually completely unintentional. So it all sort of began when my eldest daughter, who was I think about 14 at the time, got into playing D&D, and she wanted to write a campaign for our family to play, which was awesome. And so we all made our characters and she was the DM. As we were playing, about 3 months into the game, and I was having a lot of fun, and I decided that I wanted to chronicle our game play, memories. That's, you know, basically how I became a writer, was just by chronicling this game and then turning it into a novel. That's not this novel, that's another one that I'm actually getting traditionally published. But yeah, that's how it all started.
That is amazing. I haven't actually ever played D&D before, and I'd only ever sort of first heard about it through teen series like Stranger Things and Riverdale and stuff, and they all kind of play in it. So, but it sounds intriguing. It's quite an epic game, isn't it? Is it ongoing or yeah?
Yes. It's a lot of fun and it's usually pretty crazy. And you kind of intentionally make weird stuff happen.
Well, it sounds like you found a passion, which is amazing. And yeah, you've got a new book coming out with a publisher. But today we're here to talk about another new book of yours, you know, science novella. Son of Esverius has been described, you know, having Avatar vibes. Can you give us a glimpse into this world for this book that you've created? And well, what was the inspiration behind this story?
Well, this world is like a very lush subtropical world. I guess it's semi-inspired by the place that I live in, a rainforesty.
Yeah.
Also, the Dane Tree, which we visited, which was coincidentally the inspiration for the setting of the Avatar movies.
Right.
The thing that's quite different about this world is it's got electromagnetic forces, which are playing havoc with the tech. There are two camps in this world. There's the colony and there's the rebels. The protagonist gets caught by the rebels and needs to work out what he wants to do, because he's engaged in subterfuge, but he actually starts to enjoy their way of life, you know, a lot like how Jake does in the Avatar movies.
Yeah.
Slightly different. It's a different, bit of a different premise, but there's that similarity of like other similar movies like The Last Samurai, Fern Gully, Dances with Wolves, where an outsider comes into a new group of people living a, you know, a much more down-to-earth life and finding out that they actually love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I sort of drew from all those kind of things. Yeah.
It sounds like to me what you're saying as well is a bit like you with finding science fiction and finding these worlds through playing that game. It's that you've been the outsider coming in and then you found this love. So, and now you're expressing it in your books. That's fab.
Yeah, actually, I'd never really made that connection, but literally, I think that is part of it. And I think we all kind of experience that to some extent in our lives. Like, you know, we all get exposed to, you know, new experiences, and we either come to decide that we really like them, or we go, no, that's not them.
Yeah, that's it.
I think a common human experience to find yourself plonked into a new situation and have to work out how you're going to deal with it.
Yeah, sink or swim. And is it a human species or is it a new species that's in your the world?
The colonists and the rebels, they're human. Like the rebels defected from the colony for the purpose of setting up this simpler existence. But there is a non-human species that is very important in this book, and they are actually a species of giant flying cats.
Wow.
Yes. But it's super intelligent, but then they're not humanized. They are animals, but they're not tame animals either. That was one of the things that I really enjoyed playing around with in this novel because, yeah, I look around at the world and I learn so much from just observing nature. And I just love, you know, we've got a couple of pet birds and like, they are just the cutest little things. And they never pretend to be anything other than birds. And they just do bird things and they're happy being birds. I have to admit to envying that sometimes, you know, just to what would it be like to just be? And so that was something that I was really playing around with in this book as well. So how these giant flying cats, they teach the humans sort of how to be human by being themselves.
It makes perfect sense to me. It absolutely does. And it's kind of the human's journey, isn't it? Plonked on Earth to then discover exactly what you're saying, who we are, who we're meant to be. I didn't find writing until my early 30s and found this career, whereas other people know what they want to do from a very young age or, you know, so who they are. And yeah, now that all sounds brilliant. I think it sounds absolutely fantastic.
There's a few reasons. One is because like the trilogy that I'm getting traditionally published is not coming out for another, you know, probably another couple of years, late 2026, early 2027. And this book started off as a scene writing exercise that I did late last year, just as part of improving my craft. But after I'd written that scene, the whole story, I just envisioned the entire story and I got really excited about writing it. So I just like spent probably about 6 weeks drafting that first draft. I just loved it so much. So I thought, you know, this is actually publishable. I think I want to develop this and publish it. But it was because it was novella length, that's a bit of a hard sell to a traditional publisher. But also, I'd never even really considered that because I thought this is the perfect way to dip my toe in self-publishing, learn on a lower stakes project, build the audience up. I sort of saw it as this would be like the perfect entree before my main course comes out.
That's good.
Yeah. So it was always going to be a self-published project for those two reasons primarily. Mm. So I could learn the ropes, make the mistakes on the small project rather than on the big one.
But it all feeds into each other as well. You know, you're going to be doing this. Did you have to consult with your publisher about doing this?
I let them know. But yeah, they were like, oh, yeah, great. Yeah, sort of thing. Because, you know, the audience building is so important. And so it's beneficial to them that I have a decent audience to sell to when the trilogy comes out. Yeah. So it's good for everyone. And also I'm also launching it on Kickstarter, which is going at the moment. And my publisher wants to do a special edition Kickstarters of my books when they come out.
Amazing.
So that was another reason. It's like, okay, here is an opportunity for me to learn how to do a Kickstarter again in a low stakes situation, which I much prefer to learn on a low stakes.
Yeah,
and on a high stakes one.
So is your publisher going to do that special book or are they saying they want you to do it?
No, they're a small press, so they can do those sorts of things a lot more flexibly than, the bigger ones. So, they were very, very excited about the idea of doing special edition books, the beautiful editions that are just so popular at the moment. And I hope stay popular because it would be lovely to have a gorgeous special edition.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's really great that they're incorporating that into their model and all great for you. So it does sound good. So obviously the Kickstarter is up and going. Did you do much research before you went out there or how's it all going?
Oh, yeah. You have to do tons of research. We are at the a couple of days in and we are almost 100% funded. But now's the time when once you get funded, that's when the stretch goals open up. So we can, I can make the book even better or what people get even better once we reach that minimum.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that they can get even better?
Well, there's more swag items. We can get more artwork into the book. A lot of the things are behind the scenes kind of stuff. Well, a study guide, book club guide, rather. Yeah, things like that. Just little extra special little things.
Yeah, fantastic. No, that all sounds great. And how do you feel it's connecting to your readers going through, you know, the crowdfunding route? Have you had certain people reach out to you or?
I've my community has been wonderful. Like, obviously I'm getting some new people in, but the community that I'd already built up through my newsletter and through the author community that I've made through Instagram primarily, they've really rallied around me and helped me share the Kickstarter and, you know, get the message out. And it's just been really wonderful. Yeah.
I did a Kickstarter for the women's fiction behind me last year, but it wasn't for the book. I had a bit of an idea about these book bundles because I just thought like kind of an immersive experience into the book, and I was so excited about it all, but I think I really confused people because it was kind of like I'm asking them to support the Kickstarter for this and that, but then it was kind of, oh, but you can get the book available a month later. So I was effectively telling people two things, and yeah, it didn't work out for me, unfortunately, but it did well. It was all a learning curve, you know.
I was initially going to, that was my initial plan, was to have the Kickstarter come out, and then I was going to do the retail release in October this year. And I just decided, that's insane. I just cannot manage that.
Yeah.
Push back the retail release till February next year, which is great for the Kickstarter because it means that they get the book like a lot earlier than other people, which is something that Kickstarter backers really like. It's one of the things that they go there for so that they can get the book first. And they'll be getting it, you know, a good 4 or 5 months ahead of everyone else.
Other authors, their release has been either mid-year Kickstarter, then next year or whatnot. You have to obviously give something that people want and can't get for.
Definitely. And Kickstarter for Authors community on Facebook has been just a gold mine on how to do this. And yeah, I would definitely recommend starting early to like learning about how this works and what to do, because as with everything with being an author, there's a huge learning curve, and building up connections with other authors is just so crucial if you're going to do one of these, because collaborations really help that take off a lot faster. Yeah. So getting in with the community. Yeah. I have also learned that Kickstarter backers are really generous, which is really lovely. They don't want a bargain basement book. Yeah, that something extra special, and they are willing to pay for it.
Yeah,
which is just wonderful. It's a wonderful feeling for authors too, to know that someone wants something special. They're, you know, they're not just after something really.
No, that's great to know that your work's valued and what you put in as well. Yeah, it's worth it. No, that's fantastic. Well, you are an absolute hybrid author in every sense, Catherine, you know, from your publishing to the way you absolutely do things, and you mix genres as well, you know, your science and fantasy. So both blend futuristic technology and fantasy elements. How do you balance both genres across your books? I mean, that seems, is it quite a difficult thing, or is it really comes natural to you, or not something you've thought about, it's just done?
I think it's not something that I really ever thought deeply about. It's something that just seems to come more naturally, I guess, for me. Maybe because I've always read science fiction, fantasy genres and blends of science fiction and fantasy. Like, they're the kind of stories that I devoured growing up. So maybe I've just sort of absorbed it sort of by osmosis. And it definitely seemed very natural for this story because I knew I needed those kind of futuristic elements. But I also wanted the story to be very grounded in nature. And like, so those fantastical elements just seem to fit very nicely. But I've kind of always been drawn to both, and I love blends of both. And even some things that people don't necessarily think of as blends, like Star Wars, is definitely a blend of science fiction and fantasy. Romance in there as well. But, you know, you've got all the spaceships and stuff, which is definitely science fiction. But the Force is magic.
Yeah, never thought of that. It's a blend.
Same with Dune. You know, that's a blend. A big series that influenced me when I was growing up was The Dragon Riders of Pern by Anne McCaffrey. And that is another blend. Like, it starts off and you think you're in pure fantasy land. Like, there's dragons. It's a medieval-ish kind of setting. And it's not until you get like halfway through the series that you realize that this is actually science fiction.
Right.
And it was just like pretty mind-blowing to me at the time, first read it. But yeah, I don't know, I just took my imagination, you know, into wonderful places. Something more modern like Brandon Sanderson's Stormlight Archive, also call that a blend. And he does a lot of blending as well with science fiction and fantasy. He's got space travel, but there are these worlds that are pretty low technology. And yeah, he does it just really beautifully as well. So, and then just with the themes of like the technology versus nature, that suited this blend. Yeah. So I don't know. I think I just, it just came naturally. And whatever story, go to the world that the story requires.
Yeah, sounds amazing. It sounds like you definitely draw upon your inspiration for your surroundings, and I haven't quite made it to the Daintree Forest yet. I have been in Queensland. It's very lush. It actually reminds me of Scotland in a lot of ways for how green it is. No, like absolutely brilliant. Well, you've shared so much, Catherine, but do you have any other advice or anything for, you know, aspiring authors considering running a Kickstarter campaign, crowdfunding for their books, or even self-publishing or writing in your genres? Just any tips you're like, I should have known that before I did that.
I think one of the best things that I've done in terms of publishing is starting, like, learning on small stuff. Like, I launched my reader magnet, which is like my free little short story that I give out to newsletter subscribers. That was my first launch that I did, and I made it a launch. It was, you know, with little, it was low stakes, but I got a proper cover. I gathered a launch team and a set of ARC readers because I wanted to learn on the low stakes, and I would definitely recommend that other authors, whether they're intending to self-publish or traditionally publish, go through that learning curve on something small, something low stakes, because that's where you want to make your mistakes.
Yeah.
That's you want to do the learning, and not on your heart project. And another thing I wish I had have done earlier, though, is reaching out to the author community, building those connections. I stayed in my little writing cave for so long. And, like, you know, it wasn't until, I didn't feel ready to emerge and call myself an author and reach out to other authors. I think I was about like 5 drafts in or something. And I thought I'd taken it as pretty much as far as I could on my own. And that's kind of backwards thinking in a way, like, because all writing, I believe, is a collaborative. A book is never the product of just one person.
Yeah.
Like, regardless of whether you're self-publishing, traditionally publishing, or whatever, like, beta readers are so crucial to the process. An editor is so crucial. I don't know how many ideas I've just gotten to the end of my ideas, and then I just get feedback from someone else, and suddenly, like, the, you know, all these new ideas are opening up and spark. You know, it's just, you know, that joyful writing time again. Yes, if you are listening to this and you are hiding in your writing cave,
yeah,
come out.
Follow the breadcrumbs. With your beta readers and ARC teams and all this sort of thing, I mean, how do you find these people? Is it a case of just connecting with authors via community, your genres, or even in your local area, and then just sharing works? Or how have you gone about that?
Most of my current beta reading team I met on Instagram.
Mm.
So, like, I started by looking for other authors, you know, in my who were writing the kinds of books that I write, and just making connections, just commenting on their posts, maybe sending a DM, and then those little actions, creating a beta reading team. I learnt the authors who I resonated with. I read their stuff and I was like, oh yeah, I like that, a call for beta readers. And I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, I'll volunteer for yours. Paying it forward is really created my team. I read their stuff first.
So bought their book and read it and then said, oh, I love this.
Sometimes it was buying their book. Oftentimes it was just signing up for their email newsletter, reading their freebie that they sent out, you know, working out whether I liked their style and stuff, responding to calls to be on their street team or like their beta reading team. And how I started off with the whole networking thing is just paying it forward. It's worked really well. I have actual genuine friendships.
Yeah. And you share a passion as well, which is great. Is it people that are science fiction fantasy, or is it like science fiction and fantasy?
But a lot of science fiction and fantasy authors do change depending on what is needed for the story.
Thank you so much. Can you share with us all the details of your Kickstarter? We'll be putting links in, and when's it running, and where everyone can go and sign up?
Yep. Well, it started a few days ago and it runs till July 11th in Australia. July 10 if you're in the United States because of time zones. But yeah, all the details are sort of on there. There's going to be a really pretty edition of the novella. In the ebook, there's going to be full color character art and chapter headers and things like that. In the print versions, we're going to have lovely 2-page chapter headers plus the character art. That print versions will be black and white, but yeah, they're going to be just extra special editions. There's character cards and stickers and you know, a bookmark and other little bits and pieces that you just don't find in bookshops. Mm. Kickstarter runs in tiers, so there's different levels that you can back at. You can even like back, you can just sort of put in a dollar just to say, just to encourage an author, like just to say, I liked the look of your project, you know, people just pitch in a dollar or two just because they like the project. But then, you know, then you can get the ebook, and then all the way up to, I've got this massive big tier for the really, really enthusiastic people where you get the hardcover, you get all the swag and all the bits and pieces. But plus you can get a custom piece of artwork made just for you, and you can turn your favorite feline into one of my Masu giant flying cats. So my artist will, you know, turn your cat into one of my cats.
Wow, that's amazing. That would be really popular, I think.
I hope at least a few people take me up on that one, because it would just be so much fun.
And it sounds like a massive undertaking that you've done for the Kickstarter as well. How did you go about finding your artist?
That was also just through the network, and just found one that, that I really liked the style of, but basically helped through the Instagram network of authors that I've been connecting with for the past, I don't know, 2 years or so.
Oh, well, that's amazing. And it's so exciting to see it all come to life, isn't it? Especially in the drawings and everything that. It's a magical process, I think.
Seeing your characters come to life in artwork is a really amazing feeling.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Well, huge congrats, Catherine, and I'm sure you're knocking it out of the park. And as I said, we'll put the links in. And yeah, thank you so much for your time. You shared some absolutely amazing tips and tricks.
Thank you so much for having me.
So there you have it, folks, the truly remarkable Catherine DeVries. Next time on the Hubbard Author Podcast, we have Jeanette Stamponi chatting writing spooky stories for junior fiction readers. Jeanette Stamponi was born in a spooky 300-year-old house in the English countryside. She grew up with stories of local legends, pixies, ghosts, and fairies. These childhood experiences inspired Jeanette to write fun, imaginative, and quirky stories. A country girl at heart, Jeanette now lives in regional Western Australia with her husband and two boys. In 2022, Jeanette's debut picture book, Shadow and the Girl, was released by Red Paper Kite. Her second book, The Dragon Guest Handbook, was published by Wombat Books in 2024. This year, Jeanette was thrilled to release her new junior fiction book, Terrified and the Bakery Ghost, published by About Kids Books. Jeanette is an active member of the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, SWIBBY, and is passionate about sharing and creating books for kids of all ages. I wish you well in your author adventure this next week. That's it for me. Bye for now.
That's the end for now, authors. I hope you are further forward in your author adventure after listening, and I hope you'll listen next time. Remember to head on over to the Hybrid Author website at www.hybridauthor.com.au to get your free author pass. It's bye for now.